Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the very final Star Trek Picard Season 3 episode and series episode called The Last Generation. I'm here with Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I was so touched at the end of this episode when they brought the whole thing full circle and rechristened the Titan the USS Picard. Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
They should have been. That would have caused his
What happened to the emotions. F? The F is still in service, right?
It must have been destroyed.
It blown up in a battle.
It must have been destroyed to do that, right? Because you can't have two can't exist at the same time. It must have been destroyed when, what's her name? Shelby was killed. Was it destroyed at that point?
No, because it was still out there. I mean, maybe they stripped it because Shelby did a bad job or something. <I don't know.
laughs> That's an understatement. Also, they should put the shields that are on the space dock on every ship.
Yeah. Also, they should put the repair crew for space dock on every ship. Because holy shit, those guys, they rebuilt that massive thing in a year.
Yeah.
It took the Empire like 5 years to build the second Death Star, and it wasn't even done.
Yeah, to get a skeleton going on that thing. Yeah, the space dock, God rest the souls on that ship or station at first, but they did a terrific job rebuilding it after a while. But that, there's something always, I think we mentioned the Discovery, the space battle firing rate is absurdly funny to me. There's something
it's really silly
about it. It's just like, it's like a nuclear Armageddon hitting the ship constantly, and it's just, and you know, the comms are okay. The guy in the comms is like, the shields are about to go. And then they go out and they get destroyed, but that's it. Anyway, this is it. Thank you, everybody, for listening to our coverage of this season and this series. Apparently, this is it. I don't really feel like this is it, Clay. Am I wrong? Or am I right to expect that this is not the end of this?
Well, did you watch the credit sequence?
I did, but that doesn't mean Star Trek Picard, does it? Could that...
I'll tell you another reason why it's dumb they didn't call the ship the Picard, because they could have just kept calling the show Star Trek Picard.
Right, yeah, just go Star Trek Picard A-A.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, is Star Trek Picard the TV series done?
I have to think it is. Okay. I mean, if it's not, then we've all done our job very poorly.
I guess it's over. It doesn't feel, maybe it's just because I wasn't super connected to the show, but it doesn't feel like this is an ending. But anyway, let's get into it. It's called The Last Generation. It is the 10th episode of the third season of Star Trek Picard. Look how long it's been since the start of this. Aired on April 20th, 420, 2023. 30th of 30 produced in PIC, 30 of 30 released in PIC. 883rd episode of Star Trek released in all. Written by Terry Matalas, directed by Terry Matalas, in-universe date April 2401 and 2402, because it's a year later at the end. In this episode called The Last Generation, not quite as good as the Richard Hell Blank Generation song, but in a desperate last stand, Jean-Luc Picard and the generations of crews, both old and new, fight together to save the galaxy from the greatest threat they've ever faced as the saga of Star Trek, The Next Generation, comes to a thrilling, epic conclusion, parentheses, series finale, end parentheses. So here we are, Clay. What'd you think of The Last Generation?
In a vacuum, I thought it was great. I thought it was a very fun time, and it was fun to see everybody back together and doing stuff. And I thought Worf and Riker were really fun together, and Data flying the ship was fun. That's a different. We'll get to that later, but
it's a different Data, kind of fun.
Data having a good time flying the ship was fun. I continue to think Marina Sirtis is probably the best performance, or one of them.
Yeah, she's surprisingly good, isn't she?
With the little that she has to do, I thought she was great.
Yeah, she, I think she does the best job of feeling like an older version of Troy, of her previous character for some reason. It doesn't feel like she's doing the same thing, but she feels very similar to it somehow. But while also, it also kind of feels like she's not really acting as much anymore. Like, if, I feel like her TNG performance was very much an acting thing, and this feels like it's Marina Sirtis just stuck in the set, but it works for some reason for me.
Yeah, I think she's one of those characters who, once the show was over, she kind of got a little bit more naturalistic with it. When you know, when they when the show got to the point after seven seasons where it was just like, yeah, you know, Troy's here too. But, or like, they weren't trying so hard to force stuff onto her. They were just kind of letting her be herself.
Yeah.
I think it just became more naturalistic as it, as the show got older and turned into the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you know, I thought, you know, it was fun. Borg Queen, it's nice to... It was fun to see the stuff, is how I would say. That. I, like, if in a complete vacuum, if you're just judging this on how fun was it to see the stuff, I would say it was fun to see the stuff. The thing that actually, I don't know what it is about voices in this show, but the other thing that got me, the other, like, throwback thing that got me, I think maybe because it was completely out of left field, was the Chekhov thing.
Yes. Yeah. He's when the president of the Federation or something.
Yeah. When he, it wasn't specific. I mean, it was like, oh, that's good. That's great. It was Chekhov. But when he slips into the Russian accent, I like got choked up a little bit. And I don't know why.
That's because you are a Russian sympathizer. Yeah, he's good. The, I also liked the TNG moments. Like, it's not really anything insightful to say, but, like, clearly the best moments of this season, at least, were the TNG crew getting together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even though I think that they, arguably, they overdid the Riker and Worf, like, having jokes together stuff at a certain point, I did feel like every... all the jokes were like a 7 out of 10 that kind of worked for me for some reason. Like Riker picking up the sword going, Jesus, I didn't know it was so
that
heavy.
Was good. I like that, yeah.
That's very funny. Even the dumb Worf is like, let's make it a threesome. And Riker says, like, do you listen to yourself? I like those two together. I really enjoyed all that stuff. And I think that the TNG cast getting together is probably the best part of this episode. For me, and obviously the series too, but also in a weird way, at the end when they had won and they were all like, Worf falls asleep in his chair and Geordi like pats whoever's sitting next to him on the arm like an old man does, like all old men pat each other on the arm. They felt, and I know Star Trek has done this before, but I felt their age very strongly at that point, obviously, and. It was kind of weird to me that the show didn't focus on that even more at that point. But like they were also clearly so old. And I know that that's a Star Trek thing in the movies and the shows after the series is over, just say everybody gets old. But it struck me at that point. I thought that they didn't really pay much attention to that, how old everybody is in the show.
Especially when a core plot point is that people over a certain or under a certain age get assimilated by the Borg. There wasn't much attention paid to how much they had aged. And I mean, maybe I'm kind of happy they didn't do that, because that seems to, ever since Star Trek II, that seems to be the go-to for what do we do when we're coming back 10 years later. It's like, well, we're all old now, except in Star Trek II, it's like, well, I'm 55. And in this one, it's like, well, I'm almost 100.
Medical advances and all that.
Yeah. But yeah, it didn't bother me too much. I will say, for better or worse, this episode very much felt like Doctor Who to me. More so than Star Trek.
I'm not familiar with Doctor Who, so you'll have to
explain. I'm gonna try to explain it. I don't think I'm gonna do a very good job, because it's kind of like a vibe you kind of have to see to understand. But like Doctor Who, big Doctor Who finales often include a lot of intense flying. The way that they piloted the Enterprise in this very much felt like the way the Doctor would pilot the TARDIS in a high intensity situation, where, you know, you see the blue box just go spinning through like laser blasts and shit.
Right.
And even like the shot where it comes over and parks itself on top of Picard and his son before they escape very much felt like a Doctor Who type shot. Where and the whole thing with the Borg Queen had a real Doctor Who feel to it. Maybe it's because there's one of the David Tennant era Christmas specials involves there's this giant spaceship full of like arachnid aliens.
Yeah.
It's either over London or underground. I can't remember. But anyway, he goes in there and he has to stand off with this arachnid alien.
Yeah.
And due to the budget limitations, the arachnid alien, which is this like queen arachnid, was presented very similar to the way that the Borg queen is presented, which is like just torso connected to this like labyrinth of legs and shit.
Yeah.
And like web.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what it was, but the whole sequence felt very Doctor Who to me. And I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, because modern Doctor Who has its, I think when it's good, it's great. When it's bad, I think it's terrible.
Yeah.
But I think Star Trek has always felt separate from Doctor Who to me. Like they're two very different vibes generally.
Yeah.
And so to come away from this thinking like this feels a lot like Doctor Who was a little bit confusing for me. Because I didn't hate it, but I don't know if I liked it grafted onto Star Trek.
Is Doctor Who, would you say that Doctor Who feels more fantasy than sci-fi?
Yes.
I get big fantasy David Bowie labyrinth vibes from the Borg Queen in this.
Yeah. Yeah, her dick pouch was huge. No, yeah, a Doctor Who is very much sci-fi fantasy more than it is hard sci-fi, you know, yep. Like he's got the Doctor Who is the best Doctor Who is the best example of how to hand wave technobabble, where like there is a whole era where basically anytime someone was like, well, how does this work? And he's like, just don't worry about it. Just trust that it does.
Right.
And like nobody had a problem with it because it was cleverly written. But it's very much more fantasy than it is hard sci-fi.
Yeah, I got a little bit of, it was mostly the Borg Queen, I think, in this one. She feels just like a Pan's Labyrinth type.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't know how to describe it. Just sort of like more of a monster than a real character.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
So,
and, you know, it's, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk, take it where you want to take it. I'm sure we'll talk more about the Borg Queen. I don't want to make this a complete shotgun blast of opinions, but.
Yeah, it's, so I thought this was okay, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the TNG characters altogether. I thought that largely, like, it basically works as an action spectacle more than anything else.
Yes.
And that's okay, I suppose. I didn't really like the flying sequences where the ship is flying around and shooting stuff. Like,
yeah, I didn't love that either. It looked weird. Like, I don't think that ship is made to look cool while
like a fighter jet. It doesn't really look like one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the same with like whatever the fuck the Titan was doing was also absurd to me, where it would just like uncloak and shoot everybody and then cloak again and then they're like prepare for another strafing run. You know, I know we talked about before, like the fleet bombarding that station for 35 minutes felt ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So it worked as an action spectacle, I guess, even though I didn't really care for all the space action stuff. But I guess one sort of weird tangent thing. Did I had to check my TV that its motion smoothing was not on. Did you notice anything about this in that episode? I feel like this episode in particular really felt like there was some kind of smoothing effect going on.
Not that I noticed.
Okay.
Because I usually, my eyes are usually pretty sensitive to that stuff.
Yep.
And I didn't happen to notice it here, no.
Maybe I missed a setting or something, but that was just something that was kind of distracting me. And outside of that, I think that it doesn't do much at all to really, you know, it never stood a chance to close out the storylines in this season, I don't think, and it didn't really try to do any of that. But it ends with a nice little, I guess, resolution of the characters all coming together for their epilogue, and then they have their final sequence and stuff like that, and then there's the post-credits stuff.
What happened to all those changelings on all those ships? Why they couldn't continue the attack once the Borg stuff went away? I thought they had infiltrated up to like the highest levels of Starfleet.
They had, but they what did they say in this one? The changelings also didn't kill anybody. They just like put them in a closet somewhere. So
yeah,
everyone who got a everyone who got copy just coming.
They
back
also
out.
They I feel like they hand waved that by saying that they fixed the transporter so you can tell if someone was a change. But even so, it's like that requires everybody there to go through a transporter.
Yeah.
To fix that and time to develop that. So there's still
well, like,
Tuvok is still a changeling. Well, maybe not Tuvok because they know he's a changeling, but like Captain Janeway might be a changeling. You know, they really kind of dumped the changelings.
They dumped the changelings maybe not last episode. Whenever Vadik was killed, they just gave up on the changelings
Completely. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
So I guess an interesting spot there is that, like, I always got the impression that that whatever the face was that Vadik was talking to was controlling the changelings, and that this was not some kind of alliance that was being built. They didn't do anything with that. They just, through dialogue, they say that the Borg and the changelings are working together, but we never get any scene where that is shown to be the case. And that's not how I was interpreting the Vadik scenes.
And the only way we know that floating head was the Borg Queen is because Terra Metallis said it in an interview. It's not actually in the show.
Right. Yeah. So make those connections if you need to make those connections. So that was kind of underwhelming. And I think they did the changelings dirty a little bit. I still don't really understand, like, when at the end sequence here, when they come up with the transport attack and they are able to identify the changelings don't seem to be able to shapeshift anymore. I don't understand what's going on with them, but I guess I'm not supposed to know at this point. But I feel underwhelmed with the changelings by the end of it because I honestly, like, in terms of a narrative, I prefer the changelings to the Borg at this point. Yeah. I think they're more interesting, and they pulled their little switcheroo on us, and the reveal of the Borg being the big bad was not nearly as interesting as the changelings had potential to be, although I don't think they were ever going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, the changelings haven't been used in like 20 years, whereas the Borg have been in every fucking thing they've done in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
It's been in every season of Picard, so it's not like they've been on the bench for 20 years and it's a big revelation to bring the Borg back.
Yeah.
I found the changeling stuff, I was... When it started, I was intrigued by the changeling stuff just because, at least they're going to a different part of the bench instead of just, it's like Terry Metallis remembered that all of these shows exist in the same universe, finally.
Yeah.
So it's not just, well, Picard is on TNG. Who do we have to draw from? We have the Romulans, the Klingons. And I don't know, the fish head guys. Oh, and the Borg. I guess that's it, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, they're all part of the same universe. If you got Seven of Nine showing up, you can have somebody from Deep Space Nine show up. And the changelings are cool. And they're novel as far as things they've shown.
Yeah.
So it was cool to see them come back. But ultimately, it was just a big ruse.
Just a big reference, right? Like, I would argue that the changelings did not use their... the thing that makes them unique enough to make it interesting or necessary to have the characters be changelings in the show.
Yeah. Well, it's like I'm saying, once the Borg thing happened, the changelings just disappeared. And we know from the show that there are changelings on all of these ships and they just never did anything with them.
Yeah.
Like I'm surprised that there wasn't, I have a couple thoughts about what they did with the Titan in this episode, which is essentially nothing.
Yeah.
The Titan just showed up and just kind of went, well, I guess we can't do anything to help. And then just kind of waited for the Enterprise to save everybody. I was expecting Seven to have some sort of larger captain defining moment, but she kind of really didn't.
No.
So I was thinking, you get the Borg and the changelings. Why don't you have Picard deal with the Borg and you can have Seven deal with the changeling thing or something? I don't know. But
yeah.
It was really surprising to me how quickly they jettisoned all of that.
Yeah. jettisoning it for the Borg, I guess. The Borg would be a good place to start. We're obviously in the middle-ish area of Voyager, and we haven't had a Voyager episode where they run into the Borg yet. Mm-hmm. So we're not, we're outside of a, outside of Voyager being like a turning point for the Borg, we've seen everything except for the Voyager impact on the Borg. Meaning to say that we've seen everything except for those Voyager episodes. So maybe it would have been nice to have known the Voyager stuff before we got into this, but I don't think it's necessary to know. I think it's been a big shift that they've made, and I don't think this is a Voyager argument, but the modern Trek series have seems to really latched onto the idea that the Borg represent loneliness, or like the ability to not be lonely anymore. Mm-hmm. Because Jack is said in this one, like Jack's whole thing is like, I'm not lonely. I have a family here. I don't feel abandoned by my father like I do in real life because the Borg hive mind is driving me and everything like that. I don't know how I feel about that as a continuing idea. I feel that that works okay. Like in Picard season two, Girardi's storyline was that. You know, that was Girardi's thing. And they didn't do anything to set that up or make that pay off or anything. But I feel like the idea doesn't need to continue to spread beyond that, really. Like, I don't like that to be the new thing that the Borg represent, which is that they, joining them is a kind of like panacea against not feeling welcomed by other people.
Yeah.
And the show itself seems a little bit confused about that, too, because a lot of the modern Trek stuff, too, also seems to focus on and has dialogue where the TNG characters just go like, these fucking evil Borg bastards. Like, there's no, I don't know. I feel confused about how the show wants me to feel about the Borg, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts about it.
Well, I feel like they treat the Borg like a cult, sort of, with that sort of mentality of what they represent. And what you get out of joining them, like this is like joining the Borg is like joining Scientology or something, where it's you've got nowhere else to go, and then this thing,
they're a religion billboard. I just came back from North Carolina on vacation last week, and I'm struck that one of the big differences driving down the highway is that up in Northeast we don't have nearly as many religious billboards, and all the religious billboards in North Carolina are like, are you feeling lonely and anxious? God can help you. And it feels like it's that kind of a thing.
Yeah, which is, you know, I don't think that's a bad approach. I mean, as far as the Borg go, it would probably be a great PR shift, honestly.
Like
if the Queen had just, that's another thing they do on Doctor Who a lot that I always enjoy, where it's like, there's a plot that's like, you know, there's a new self-help program that's taken London by storm or something like that, but there's something kind of fishy about it. So the Doctor and his companions go and they investigate it. And then like at the end of the episode, the first episode of this, of the arc, you find out that the person behind it is the Daleks or something, you know, it's like a cover. so it's, it would probably be very helpful PR wise for them to shift into self-help more than anything else than taking over the world. But,
they kind of go both ways in this episode, don't they? Like I feel like this episode, when dealing with the Borg, tries to cover virtually every base that the Borg have been at some point. So like, they talk about the loneliness angle. They talk about assimilation. Jack has a lot of dialogue that is like, down to his costume is almost ripped from their original appearance in Best of Both Worlds, which is it's like, obviously, he looks like Locutus, but the way he's talking is more like the original Borg conception, which is this, just that like, by combining everything that we encounter, we become a perfect culture, basically. Like, we take the best of you and we make it part of us. Mm-hmm. And through that, there is no more fighting, there's no more war, there's no more like angst or bad emotion, because we all operate as one entity. And I just find that conception of them more interesting than the emotional aspect of like, I'm a crazy Borg queen lady monster that is going to try to convince you that you won't be lonely if you spend time with me for eternity. I don't know. I just I know the Borg haven't been that way in a long time, but it struck me as the episode was doing it both ways, and I much prefer the original conception of them.
I would say I think there's room to say that she's doing that intentionally to seduce Jack.
Yep.
And that it might not be a literal a literal expression of what they're about now as much as it is just a seduction thing.
Jack talks about it though, I guess. Like that, so it's important to Jack at least, you know? Like
right. I was going to say with Girardi, I buy that stuff a bit more because she is like a weird sort of outcast. Jack is like a handsome, smooth-talking, roguish guy who's probably never had a problem making friends. Like he's not... He doesn't
definitely
come
had
off
sex
exactly
with the LaForge ensign at some point in the show.
Oh, and if he hasn't, he probably will. Like that last scene on the bridge of the new Enterprise, I was like, it was almost like they were already setting up some sort of triangle between him, Seven, and LaForge.
Yes, yeah.
But like, you know, he doesn't exactly come off as the usual, I've always felt like I was different type of guy, you know?
Yeah.
So I buy that a lot less than I do with someone with like Girardi, but obviously he's like genetically predisposed to it and he's searching for whatever.
They're trying to link it to his father, right? They're trying to say your father's abandonment of you is what is causing you to reach out to the Borg. And like the abandonment thing is the reason that I think I have a problem with the Jack storyline is that the abandonment story is one of these things that requires you as a viewer to say that Picard is an incredibly important person in this universe, right? Like in a show that actually took things seriously, this is an episode that's fairly insulting to Beverly as a mother in some ways, like what it's saying is that Picard is much more important, even though he's had almost no impact on Jack's life other than this Borg disease that he has.
My favorite part of the whole episode is when they're hugging and they do the flashback montage to like all of the stuff that happened in like the last 48 hours.
Yes. It's just the two good memories that they have of drinking at the bar with each other.
Yeah.
But that's the weakness of like Jack thinking that Picard is important to him is mostly an artifact of the fact that Picard is important to this franchise and to the viewers, right? So Jack accepting Picard hits home in a way that doesn't really feel like it should matter in the story to the way that it does. And it feels like it's a little bit of a undermining of the Beverly Crusher character because she raised the kid for so long and it doesn't seem to have any impact on it. And Picard just steps in at the last moment and has something to say about it. And that's why I don't really buy their relationship as a father and son thing because it doesn't roll that way for me.
What I was just thinking is I wonder if it works better if the setup is that Jack is actively trying to learn about who he is at the beginning of the story. And so he like actively seeks out Picard.
Yep.
And Picard kind of rejects him. And I know they do that in the flashback, but I'm talking about like in the body of the show here.
Mm-hmm.
So you see this progression where Jack is actively trying to find out more about who he is. He reaches out to Picard. Picard sort of pushes him back and rejects him a little bit. And then through the course of the story, they connect and whatnot. And then so when Jack feels this pull from another part of him, he is still... It's part of that same thing he's after, which is to find out more about who he is. And so it feels a little bit more reasonable that he would then be like, I guess I'll go fly to the Borg cube and see what's up over there. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. I'm not sure.
Well, I think it probably would. It's honestly, I think it's just the fact that the two characters don't spend a tremendous amount of time with each other, really.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So a lot of the lifting is on this thematic idea of the Locutus infection is the sins of the father kind of thing being passed down to Jack. And I think there's like too much going on for the 10 episode story. And also they don't particularly pay attention to a lot of it for those 10 episodes. So it's another one of those pacing issues, or it's some kind of issue aligned with pacing where they have this idea for this germ of a story between Jack and Picard, but they don't And they also have a show that feels in the middle like they ran out of story. And so you're like, well, why couldn't they have focused more on that stuff at that point or built it up a little bit? And it's, I think it's just one of the, you know, the byproduct of the show isn't particularly interested in that stuff. It's just kind of using it as something to hang the bringing everyone back on. So it's, the show isn't interested in the actual Jack and Picard relationship. It's just kind of exists as a way to further the plot that's going on in the show. And so you have this dead space in the middle that could have been fleshed out and made the Jack storyline be relevant and mean something. And it ultimately is not super important to anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it works fine in the episode itself. You know, it's, that's what I was talking about when I said it's, I think this episode is great in a vacuum where it's like, if this is the only episode you've watched, I don't think they do anything as far as their storylines that feel completely out of left field.
Yeah.
But once you start folding in everything they've done before it, it just, that's when it starts to get kind of wonky and not quite, hold up in the way that you'd want it to.
Did you like Jack and Picard in the hive mind thing where Picard, after Picard plugs himself back in and they are talking to each other in that green cloud?
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah. I mean, it was, I don't know what else you do there, but yeah. that's,
I think that's my take of it. It's like, it's everything that happens in there is like, you go, yeah, this is probably what should happen here.
Yeah. I guess my only issue is sort of similar to what I was saying about what Jack is after is, when he's in the hive mind and he and Picard is trying to get him out, I don't feel like he has been given something by the Borg that, like, he's not in the Nexus, right? Like he's not in the ideal, he hasn't gotten the thing he's been searching for his entire life kind of thing. It's just sort of like a generic, well, I'm in here, there's no hurt. It's all peace, and you know it's like, all right, great, buddy.
Yes, right, and his actual body is just a vessel, you know, like a Borg shell. At that point,
I think that stuff would have a little bit more weight to it if the Borg. I mean, I guess they kind of lean into it with him being like, oh, it's what I am, or whatever. But my apologies to all of England,
Oi. Don't unplug me, mate.
Or you direct me, disconnect me from this fucking cat. This show would be better if Bob Hoskins was his son.
Bob Hoskins is Jack Crusher, I think.
That would be amazing. but yeah, like if it was something that was,
it's so low budget in the hive mind. There's no other Borg in the hive mind, so you don't know what's going on.
I kind of found their excuse for that pretty clever.
Yeah,
where they're, you know, I thought it was cool that the Borg were in such a bad place that the Queen was essentially cannibalizing everybody to keep herself alive.
Yeah, makes
which
sense.
See, I like that for a number of reasons. A, because it's kind of cool. B, it's illustrating what ultimately the Borg actually is, and that's for all of the shit that she talks about being a collective and a family, it's just to sustain her.
Yeah.
And so I like that. And yeah, I thought it was a clever way to get around how do they go into the Borg ship and have there be no Borg. Again, though, like, it's a cool idea in a vacuum. But I kept thinking to myself, why didn't they try to assimilate the changelings?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Changeling Borg, again, budget or whatever. I understand the practical reasons why not, but like, if you watch this episode, you go, oh, that's kind of cool, the Borg thing. Yeah, they're dying, cannibalizing. And then someone told you, yeah, they were working with the changelings. You go, what?
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen a scene of that meeting, that interaction where the changelings meet the Borg. It's not to be. Yeah, I liked the Borg Queen cannibalizing everything. I think that works as a final Borg thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it just comes down to, I really do, you know, I just think the Borg lost something when it became a vendetta from one Borg character chasing after Picard, really.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
It doesn't really have the same thing going forward, even if you do try to end it this way where they're cannibalizing themselves. And I think that works well. I had something I wanted to say about Jack. No, I guess I think it's a good point that Jack's joining of the Borg does not seem to be a draw to him in the way that is strongly character motivated. It's more just like the genes that are in him that are activated by the Borg and call him back is what does it. And it should probably be something more personal that he's doing. I think that metaphor of the Borg solving your loneliness is not particularly useful in this storyline like it was last season.
This felt closer to me in Zoolander when he goes back to coal mining country.
Yeah.
That's how much I believed that the Borg were answering any questions that Zach had.
Right. Yeah.
Jack had.
Yeah.
This is where I belong.
This is where I belong. He's in there. The Borg do that stuff. The Borg ship is stuck in Jupiter, I guess, interestingly. It's a very big Borg ship or something. What the hell else is there? There's the action sequence.
It's never, like you said, it's never going to be not silly to watch 1,500 ships just blasting lasers at one thing.
I don't think we laughed enough about fleet formation last episode either.
Yeah, fleet formation is pretty stupid.
I don't get that at all. What else? Does anything else happen during the middle section before we get to the epilogue? Worf and Riker have their adventure. Worf get shot by the Borg 1,000 times and not die? What happened there?
Yeah, he gets shot in the arm twice.
Okay.
What did you think? I saw some people complaining about the cook stepping up to fly the ship.
Yeah.
I didn't mind it. He reminded me of Neelix. I felt that was a very Neelix type scene, so it didn't really bother me.
I didn't mind him. It seemed it's maybe the problem with it is it's another one of these weird tonal decisions. At this dramatic moment, you have a character who's geez, guys, I don't know about this.
And again, and I understand they're doing this because it's the thing people expect to happen, but I couldn't help but laugh when Seven's giving them their orders and then they all kind of hesitate, obviously because it's a suicide mission or whatever. But then she stands up to give this languid, inspirational speech. And every time they cut to the guys driving the ship, all you can see out the view screen is the space station getting absolutely fucked by 100,000 other ships or however many it is. And she's standing there being on this day, we will be the ones. It's
on our Independence Day.
Guys, save the talk for later. I wish they gave Seven something better to do because she's just that's not even to speak of Rafi, who I still don't understand why she's in the show, but.
Well, they're friends again at the end of it, which is nice.
Yeah. Aren't we happy we saw any of that evolution?
I mean,
I'm kind of happy they didn't spend any time on that. But
Amy had a pretty funny joke. She was watching this and she's like, oh, are Seven and Shaw, are they having sex? I was like, no. She's like, oh, it seems like they have a little bit of chemistry or something because she cries when she sees the Shaw hologram thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was like, no. I was like, Seven's actually a lesbian with Rafi, the other female character. And she goes, oh, they're lesbians? I was like, yeah. She's like, does the show ever do anything with that? I was like, they held hands in the first season. And she goes, I guess according to this show, I'm a lesbian. I was like, well, I can't argue with that logic, I guess. But no, I don't know what that relationship was spanning the three seasons. That's pandering, mm-hmm. if I've ever seen pandering. It added nothing to either one. It didn't even bump Rafi back into the positive territory of having a characterization.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's explicitly pandering as much as it's just too much for an already bloated show.
What did they ever do with it though?
Nothing. It comes up what is it? It forms, they kind of form their thing at the end of the first season, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they
They up in the second season at some point. Before we see the second season, they've had a like tiff with each other.
Yeah, seasons 2 and 3 both start with them having not seen each other because they're mad at each other.
Right.
Yeah. But they never have like any sort of meaningful reconciliation. And in season 2, I think it's probably a bigger strike against the show than it is here, because honestly, I don't really give a shit. You're not gonna cut time with fucking Data and Geordi hanging out so you can see what's going on with Raffi in 7 of 9.
Well, that's just unprofessional.
But even so, there wasn't even a moment like, you know, in the last episode when they're escaping the ship and she stays behind and all that kind of stuff. There wasn't even like a payoff to that, where in this episode they had like a single moment together.
Yeah.
Where there was some sort of like not even a 2-line reconciliation sort of thing, or there was nothing.
Yeah. I guess I would just say maybe if it's not pandering, it was like an idea that they stuck in at the end of the first season, then just literally had no idea what to do with it.
I would say it's more that than anything else, because you know, why not? Relationship, cool, whatever. I mean, that could have been Rios and 7, you know, and it would have been the same thing.
Yes, it would have. 7 ultimately didn't need to be in the show. Raffi didn't really need to be in the show, I don't think. Those two don't have much to do during. What is Raffi doing during this? I'm trying to remember.
She's just there. She's just like shooting. She develops the mobile transporter.
Oh, that's right.
Gun.
Yep. I feel like we've seen that before. Haven't we seen that before? The transporter where they were shooting people and beaming them off? Isn't it another show do that or something?
I don't remember. I can't think of it.
Too many Star Trek episodes. The person on Twitter who combined sabotage with the Enterprise D fighting things in space is very good. I enjoyed that.
I didn't see that. That's pretty good.
Anything else to say about this before we get to like the epilogue stuff?
Did they in that video? Do they cut to Data going, is this classical music?
No, unfortunately, it's just sabotage. Which sabotage does seem to work as the background noise for a big intense fight scene.
I can't think of anything else that really.
I mean, there's like thematic stuff, but I feel like that can just be held off until the end of it. How did you like? I feel like that's important too. I have a point that I would want to say about this with the TNG characters talking to each other, but it only works if I bring in the end, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll skip that for now. How you can get into the specifics if you want, but like, how do you feel that this works as a conclusion for the TNG cast?
I honestly, I don't really feel like it's a conclusion for them, in that this feels like a special, like it feels like, it's a kind of a Doctor Who-y kind of thing where I feel like this is it's the 50th anniversary show where they bring back 3 other doctors or something.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, well, you know, it's fun to see them back. And at the end, they're going to be gone, but it's not, it like, it doesn't take, I don't, well, let's put it this way. I have rewatched All Good Things multiple times, like by choice, not just for this.
Not as prep for this podcast.
Yeah. And I probably won't rewatch this.
Yeah.
Like even this last episode, it's like, yeah, it's fun, but you know, I don't really need to see this again. I would probably rewatch Nemesis before I watch this again.
Yeah.
And it ultimately feels like a curtain call, but it doesn't feel like an ending, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was struck by, you know, the ending of Nemesis is kind of controversial. And I like, before watching the series, I would have said it was kind of maybe not controversial, but there's something like, because Nemesis ends on a downer, really. Like,
right.
Everyone is splitting up. Data's dead. The slight glimmer of hope is that B4 seems to have some of the memories of Data. But like, everything is being literally like broken apart there at the end of that. And so people feel it's kind of bittersweet as a finale. It's interesting because I think that this show just doesn't capture the right emotion, because All Good Things works as a really like sort of like very pleasant ending to a very pleasant series, you know?
Yeah.
And Nemesis works as a finale to the whole thing in that its unsatisfactory ending is kind of emotionally memorable in a way that this is not going to be for me.
Yes. Yep.
So this one feels like they're trying to get the All Good Things stuff while also having a little bit of the Nemesis mixed into it, in that like it feels like it's supposed to be a truly final thing, not knowing that there's not going to be movies after it. But it's also so redundant with All Good Things, intentionally redundant with it, I don't feel that it's done anything unique to itself. It's just kind of reliving that glory again. And I don't think that that's very effective.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I don't really think, you know, say what you will about, and I'm sure there are people who would probably point out a handful of things that I'm ignoring here, but say what you will about Nemesis. I feel like Nemesis kind of pushes, I think I said this last episode too, Nemesis kind of pushes things forward in a certain way. Whereas this kind of just feels like it, you know, whether it's the Enterprise E or the C D E F E, what number are they on?
G is the last one, right?
So what was the one from Nemesis? Was that E?
E Enterprise.
That's the
E.
One that's after the D. D. Okay.
Yeah.
So whether it's the Enterprise E or the fact that Riker is moving on to do something as be a captain, they're splitting everybody up, like you were saying.
Yep.
It feels like the story is moving forward, whereas this feels like they're just slotting in pieces to stuff that already exists. It doesn't, like you're saying, it doesn't feel novel. It doesn't feel like they're really pushing anything forward in a meaningful way for Star Trek as a whole.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels like a...
I also don't know where the characters are at the end of this. Like, I guess they're not together,
but
they're not anywhere new that I can tell. Like, Geordi, I guess, is going to go back to work. Data is around again. Riker and Troy go off, and Picard just goes off. There's no... It also doesn't capture the ending of DS9, which I'm not sure how you much remember, but, like, that also had characters going off into new destinations for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's... I understand why that isn't something that everybody wants to see, but if you're talking about actually ending a story, then your characters have to end up in a new place than the place that they started, right?
Yeah.
And this is much more of like a class reunion than it is a graduation. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that might be, and if that's what you want, that's fine. I mean, but I don't think that this is any sort of marked move forward for the Star Trek universe, or the story in general, just because now we have another Enterprise that is a different ship with a new coat of paint on it. And, you know, even the Q thing, it's like, all right, okay, so now it's his trial. Okay, great.
I think the repetition really got me at the end. Once it went into the poker scene, I kind of liked the bar scene because I thought it was a weird, strange, unusual energy for this crew to have with each other, which is like a casual, you know, where Picard is like a bartender at spring break behind the bar, just like filling up everyone's glasses.
It's just him and Bill Murray pouring screwballs for everybody.
And just to go into the poker and... have no bittersweet, and then to go into the Q thing, obviously all of this is just All Good Things references where now the new trial has to start, and it's like Q's justification isn't even good. Like, it's like, yeah, this is, you are the new, you're the
I know,
new
I wish,
defendant.
I wish he had something when he was like, oh, I thought you said the trial was over. And he's like, well, you didn't count on mistrial or lack of evidence, so we're taking it back to court. We've got the new jury in, and we're ready to retry. Oh, boy.
And I guess Q is a good place to bring the end here. And then we can kind of go into
Before we get
up.
Into that,
yep.
I did want to say... I thought the one point where Stewart really dug deep to get some of that old Picard fire back was that nice camera move they did where he's like, "What began 35 years ago ends tonight." Like that, I was like, "Okay, that's it. That's the line must be drawn here." That's he's got a bit of that in there.
Yeah,
and then also when he got to do a little bit of Shakespeare at the end, that was fun.
Yes, that was.
I'm assuming that's what that was.
That felt appropriate for I think that dialogue was fitting for his character at that age. I don't think Stewart's energy is anywhere near. We're going to end this with watching a TNG episode for patrons, and I think that we'll be kind of shocked by the energy again. We were shocked the last time we did it when we watched the Picard episode, and then we watched TNG. We're like, he seems a lot younger here.
Yeah, there was a shot of the bridge with everybody on the bridge, and I actually said to Caitlin, I wish they would get him like a booster seat or something. It looks
he's
like
kind of hunched over.
Yeah, he was just like sinking into the seat. I wish he had a little bit more lift to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's older now, but like when he gets up in the chair, a lot of the blocking they were doing is obviously like very intentionally callbacking what they would used to do. And when he stood out of the chair and did that Picard thing of walking towards the view screen that he was looking at, It was more hobbling, honestly, than walking. Yeah. And it's just like, man, he's just old at this point. And this is just hard to effectively pull off.
You know, one of the things that I like about Star Trek and the way that they use legacy characters to push things forward in subtle ways is the ranking system. Because I always find that it's a great storytelling shorthand to bring back an older character, say like Sulu. And then the next time Sulu shows up on a new show, he's a captain.
Yeah. Like Tuvok in this episode.
Yep, Tuvok in this one. Perfect example. So and there's something strange to me about arresting that development, as it were, by having these characters
go back
sort
into
of
their
fall
assignments.
Yeah. Like even in the TOS movies, the first couple, I should say Wrath of Khan is where they do it the most because he gets promoted to admiral or whatever. And then they just bust him back down to captain. And he's like, excellent. Yeah. Perfect. But I always felt like having those characters show up as higher ranks, or even Janeway showing up in, is it Nemesis that she shows up?
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing adds to the world building in a way that I don't think this show really did.
Yeah.
Except for Tuvok. Tuvok being an admiral or whatever he was is cool. And but I miss that stuff in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather see Tuvok in the role that he played in this than I would see him as like the science officer, the emergency science officer on the Voyager 2 or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I think that I feel similarly about I think the amount of Enterprises that we've seen since
there's
the
so
movies
many.
is kind of a similar idea to that, which is that like through TOS and TNG, each of the Enterprise ships from the original to the D, like the original, the A, B, C, and D, all of them felt like they occupied an important point in a timeline of the franchise.
Yes,
really.
Yes.
And the new ones, they come so quick and so fast that like they're just printing them off the press and like they just keep, and there's no, the thing that I like about the ship is not the name that's on it. It's kind of that like the ship represented this thing in this place in the universe. And the new ships just don't have any time to do that at all. And I think that the characters are the same way. When it feels like no time has passed, it feels like they are just characters being thrown into a space instead of like a realistic feeling of a character in that space. I don't know how to describe it. It doesn't feel like they are any longer a part of something. It feels like what we were talking before, which is that they're the actors walking around on the set again, and it's not the universe that I'm used to.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel the same way. I feel like the Enterprise evolution is indicative of the evolution of the show and the timeline that they're in. Because you're right, they do occupy very specific points of time and importance. And so going through three of them across 10 episodes kind of takes away some of the specialness.
Yeah. They don't even build them at the end. They're just like, this is another ship. We're going to call it the Enterprise.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, that's what they do with that's what the B is. The B is just a refit Excelsior class.
But it's a new ship, isn't
that's
it?
That's true.
They built it.
It's the maiden. Yeah. The maiden voyage is in Generations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how do you feel? So how do you feel about, with this in mind, talking about the ship? Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this sort of backdoor Enterprise kind of thing? Because you know, if we're looking at it the way that you were talking about it. You have the original ship, obviously, in the original show serves its purpose for that space and time. The A serves its purpose for
the movie era.
And then you have this passing of the torch with the B, because even though we only see it for like 5 minutes, it still serves its purpose to link the two series, basically. Yeah, links the two series. The C obviously serves its purpose and is handled in a very fun way. The D obviously, the E obviously, the F is just a blip on the screen. But yeah. This one, how do you feel about this idea that we have spent the entire series, the entire season on the Enterprise, but we didn't know it?
Hmm. It doesn't really matter to me. I guess.
Yeah.
Because like I honestly don't have many strong feelings in the way the Enterprise E at all. You know, mm-hmm. It was just the new set for the movies, and it didn't feel like, I don't connect with it as a sort of homey feeling in the way that the D or the original ones do. Obviously you spend a lot more time with them, but it's, you know, it's like, I went to school here at a school called Doherty, and we live down the street from it now because I've moved back home. And the original building is going to be demolished, and they've built a new one next to it. It's right next to it on the spot that the old school was, and mm-hmm. It's going to be called Doherty Memorial High School again. My kids are probably going to go to that school, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't really go to my Doherty at all.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like the name can only go so far. When I walk into that building, I'm not going to be like, oh, man, great memories here.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's that kind of a thing. And I just don't have any connection with those ships. I know that they just want to keep bringing the ships back because it's kind of novel to see, and you can fill out a memory alpha page by adding a new ship and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. The pace that they do it and the pace that they introduce it just doesn't make me feel the sadness or like the sort of like, ah, shucks moment of when like the Enterprise D is destroyed in Generations, mm-hmm. which actually feels mm-hmm. like it's kind of like a sad moment. These ships can blow up all the time and I wouldn't really care. If the Titan/Enterprise blew up, it doesn't bother me. And I won't look back on this series going, they were on the Enterprise the whole time. We just didn't know it, you know?
Yeah. I wonder how people felt about the updated ship in the first TOS movie.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've heard people talk about how mad they were at Generations for blowing up the D.
Yeah.
Because you're mad at your girlfriend for doing that too, right? sorry. Just turned into Andrew Dice Clay for a second. But you know, and there's a certain attachment to it, obviously.
Yeah.
But they don't even give you the satisfaction in the motion picture because they just start the movie with a new ship,
yeah.
That's been rebuilt and retrofit. And I don't know if I think there wasn't quite that sort of attachment to these things the way that we have them now. Also,
the attachment to the original Enterprise in the motion picture. You mean?
Yeah. So like people going to see the motion picture when they do that strafing run, 5 minute strafing run of the new ship.
Yeah.
I don't know if was there anybody in the crowd who was like, this is bullshit. I want to see the ship from the show.
Yeah, do you
How
think that,
dare they?
Do you think that the A looks different enough and not just a this is a movie budget original version ship? You know what I mean?
I think it does. I think it's, I mean, it's the same design, but I do think it's sleeker and yeah. more detailed.
Yeah.
And they got rid of those goofy ass red nipples on the nacelles.
The round nacelle bits. Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. I think thematically that makes sense, though. You know, it's like it's not Kirk's coming back, and it's not the same thing.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. It definitely makes sense.
Yeah, but would I guess? I know what you mean.
I don't know what point I'm trying to make. I guess I'm just musing about this idea that, you know, there is such an attachment to,
yeah,
the Enterprise D, maybe because TNG exists so much more readily than the original show did, so people have.
Yep.
Much more of an attachment. Like, I'm trying to think, like...
Well, it clearly matters, right? Because they brought it back in this series.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I'm trying to think, though, like, if in Star Trek III, when they have to steal a ship to go get Spock,
yep.
if Uhura was like, come with me to Dock 12. And they open up and it's she's been secretly working on the original ship from the show for 20 years. Like, is that a moment where you would go, oh, thank God, yes, back to the ship that I love? Or is it just sort of, or would it?
No,
would
that would be weird. Yeah, I think it's just part of this, what this season is, which is just like the ships are stored on a collector's mantle station. You know, it's they sit in these little cell things that people can go and look at them.
Yeah, it is. There is a real sort of parallel to merchandise culture in that sense. Yeah.
I
and I say that as someone with a pretty awesome Generations era Enterprise looking down at me from my bookshelf.
Have you ever, do you know the Mr. Show sketch, The Story of Everest?
I don't think so.
People can look that one up. But I imagine you with the Starfleet badges in that one. It's the sketch of the guy climbs Everest and he goes home to tell his parents, but they have like a thimble collection on the wall. And he keeps telling the story about climbing Everest, and he keeps falling and like tripping and falling into the thimble collection and knocking them everywhere, and they keep setting them back up. But I just imagine that with the starships on it.
Yeah. I mean, that again, that's very much like the other side of my view, which is my badge collection.
Yes. So the badges would just be flying all over the place. Yeah, I guess that's it. I think that, you know, a friend of the pod, Darren Mooney, had done his reviews. I guess he didn't. I was looking. He hasn't reviewed the last four because he didn't get the screeners for them, which seems to be more than an oversight at this point, interestingly. But I was just following his Twitter threads as the season was wrapping up. And he's more annoyed by the, like, reference fest than I am, mm-hmm. I think. But I do get the point of just like the endless references here, particularly towards the end, just to bring it back to this ending point, is that like there is no original thought in the end. Like it's
right.
It just exists as the characters. This is what they would be like if they were together 30 years later. And here, let's redo the ending exactly the same way as we did it before.
Yeah. When they did the card thing, I kind of groaned a little bit, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I was like, and I mean, maybe we want the wrong things out of this. I mean, because I said it feels like a class reunion. Maybe that's all it is supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But when they did the card thing, I was like, yep, this is the one reference that they didn't do yet. It's everybody sitting around the card. Remember when they did that at the end of The Better Show?
Yeah. I do. I remember. Yeah. I mean, well, I guess that's a good point before we go into the final Q stuff. Isn't this supposed to be more than that? Why not make this a movie if it's going to be that?
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I was thinking about Doctor Who, where it's like they do these huge galactic spanning storylines in like two, maybe three episodes.
Yeah.
And I feel like most of the time they don't really feel like you're missing out. Like the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who was an hour and a half, I think.
Yeah.
And they had three doctors running around through the whole thing, through like across like 600 years of Earth time, plus two or three different kinds of alien species. They wrapped up a series long plot about the Time War. And then every single doctor from the history of the show showed up at the end to help save the day. And it didn't feel overstuffed. It felt like everything worked. I've watched it multiple times. I think it's one of the best specials like that I've ever seen.
Yep.
And I just kept thinking about that here. It's like, couldn't we have done this in four episodes or something and really tightened it up, you know?
Yeah. And just to, because I think that the movie feels more, if you're just going to do a reunion fest, a movie feels like a better medium for that than
right,
a 10-episode show, which is that, because at least judging by what people were saying, like they ran into like actor availability issues during this. And
mm-hmm.
I think that the movie just gets around that. It's like, guys, you need to book 4 weeks to get this done. And we'll do it when everyone's available. But I guess they, you know, you can't. There's some kind of monetary. Although the Section 31 with Michelle Yeoh is going to be a movie, right? So
I mean, if they're going to do that, I guess it's good that they're doing a movie and nothing else.
That's great. Obviously, a movie in the sense it's not getting a theatrical release. It's just going to be a Paramount,
right?
But it's a 2-hour thing.
You know, it's too bad we're not further down the line in Deadwood, because I feel like the real comparison here is how does this compare to the Deadwood movie?
Yeah, that's true. We'll get there. We'll put a pin in that, I suppose.
And when we get there, we're going to have to rewatch all 10 episodes of this so we can really accurately compare them.
Yeah, Picard's Deadwood-esque dialogue at the end of this one I think will be appropriate. So let's get to Q. You know, if I wasn't upset enough, not upset, if I was I was a bit deflated with the poker stuff, then I was just like, well, this is just a retread.
That's
and
what
then,
she said.
Then Q came, and I was like, I became a little bit actively angry at the end when Q appeared. And
I actually audibly went, what?
So my problem here, besides the fact that it is honestly just like a reboot, like the show thinks that you might have a stroke in the past 3 minutes and you're not going to remember that TNG is this is like the setup for it.
My
major problem is that these shows can't act like death means anything for characters death doesn't mean anything in this universe. Characters can just come back.
Did you see the bit it was the same interview with Metallus where he was talking about the Borg Queen thing, where he was talking about Shaw, and he said, or maybe it was the actor who played Shaw was saying this. He was like, yeah, I've already been talking to Terry about how we would bring Shaw back if we ever want to do that. And it's amazing. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Well,
I say that as someone who loves comic books where nobody stays dead.
but it's, my problem with it is that you can't keep treating death as important and expect me to respect your creative storytelling decisions if you're just going to erase all of that eventually.
Right.
Like, what does Picard dying at the end of the first season mean if he gets his Gollum body and just kind of...
Nothing.
And they can't bring it up. They can't do anything. What does Q's... Season 2 sucked, right? But Q's death was apparently supposed to mean something in that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just now... He's back... And he's also back with an attitude that's like, well, why did you even act like this death in season 2 was a thing that was going to bother you at all?
Well, so I was thinking the same thing. And then he said the thing about humans always thinking so linearly.
Right. This is a time travel thing.
You think? And again, that was, well, I mean, it's the Q exists at many different points in time at the same time. Like, right. Again, this is a very Doctor Who kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I was like, okay, fine. I can buy that. However, I still think it's a step backwards.
Well, he's not really dead. If the Q can exist at any point in time, death is impossible for him because he can just Well, time travel to another point.
Well, I guess it depends on how you look at it, right? Again, to go back into Doctor Who, one of the best new characters from the modern era of Doctor Who is this character named River Song, who is the
lead singer of Weezer.
Yes. When we meet her, we find out that she's the Doctor's wife.
Yep.
And what we find out is they are actually crossing paths in reverse time. So the first time that we meet her, she actually dies.
Right.
And then she comes back in a handful of episodes later, and you realize, oh, we're seeing the Doctor meet her in reverse linearly than she exists, kind of, if
yep.
that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's really clever, and it makes for a really fun way to keep her coming back and to get into her character, even though she's already been dead. So it's like she's not cheating death because her timeline is set. It's just that we are picking it up at different points
yep.
because the Doctor can jump through time and stuff like that. Yep. So with someone like Q, I could buy that there is this idea that we are seeing Q here at a different point in his own personal timeline
yep.
than we did in season two. But again, still kind of cheap.
Yeah, I guess my counter to that would be if that Rivers character or River, mm-hmm. say you had a season where you met this character and she died, right?
Yep.
And then you had another season where they did the reversal trick.
Right.
I think you're losing something there because the whole plot of her seems to be built around the fact that it's this novelty of this is how you interact with this character is through this reverse timeline. But yeah.
Well, the thing that they built into her story, which is actually really clever, is the when she first shows up and she runs into the Doctor, and at that point the Doctor doesn't know who she is.
Yep.
And she says, I haven't seen you since, and I can't remember what the event is. I'm sure the Doctor Who fans are screaming it at me. But so we know now that after she comes back, we know that there is a singular event in her future that is going to mark the last thing that happens before she dies.
Yeah.
And so eventually you can have these stories with her, and eventually you get to this point where we see the Doctor and River have this moment together, and that's the point that we know, okay, she's gonna die. Like that's her real death.
Right.
Is the that moment in time.
Right.
It's very clever and very effective.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that here. This is just they spent the whole season building up to the death of Q, and then they're like, who cares?
Yeah, he can't die. So I mean, unless you have any other thoughts about that,
Delancey looks good.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
do you want to see more of this?
No, I don't want to see any more of this.
Are they going to do more?
That's my question. Is there going to be a Jack Crusher show?
It seems like they're angling for it. And I mean, so the thing that I find so interesting about all this, right, having the audacity to lead into a new show at the end of this is, you know, I saw someone, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or if it was in the Discord, someone asked, or someone speculated what the show would be like and could it continue to be as good as this season was. And I was like, no, because the only thing that made this work was the old cast.
Yeah.
And as soon as you remove that, there's nothing stopping this from just tumbling back into the same shit that we've been getting with every other show.
Yes.
At least, you know, Strange New Worlds has a bit of a buffer built in because it's all characters that we know.
Right.
And even there, it's like they are treading dangerously close to bust. Oh, that's what I wanted to bring up. They really got to stop it with this fourth wall breaking. So what are you going to say before you hit the hyperdrive? You know, I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
Like the first time they did it, I forget, was it Michael? I think it was Michael was the first time they did it. I was like, okay, fine, sure. Cute, wink.
Oh,
Did
they actually bring her up in that sense where she was conscious of the fact that she had to say something there?
I can't remember.
Okay.
I know that there was someone, maybe it was...
I thought she said, let's fly, or something.
Yeah. Maybe it was Pike. Maybe Pike was the first one.
Pike.
Anyway, they've done it before where they're like, you know, what's... And the thing that killed me, the reason that it stood out to me so much is in those Strange New World trailers they've been playing before the episodes.
Yeah.
Like the last thing in it is the joke where Spock is in the captain's chair, and then Ortega says, are you going to say the thing? Everybody's got a thing. Yep. What's your thing? And then he's like, make the ship go fat, which I, kind of a fun joke. But the pointing it out and then watching this episode where they do the exact same bit at the end made me think, like, come on, guys. It's like when your catchphrase goes from something that you say organically into something that you have to say every single episode.
Yeah,
that's when you gotta stop doing that stuff.
Yeah, the franchise is just too aware of itself. At this point, and that's part of the feeding on itself. So you think there'll be a Jack Crusher show? I'm not interested in a Jack Crusher show.
Yeah,
that's awful. No.
Yeah, I mean, Seven as a captain has some potential, I guess.
I'm sort of interested in what you think about Seven, because you haven't seen her Voyager version yet. Like, what? I don't know if we need to get into it now, but like I'm confused by Seven in the same way that I'm confused by a lot of the arcs on this show.
Yes.
I just don't know. She sort of ends up in a place where someone will say, like, and now you've learned the true lesson, Seven. And I sit there and I go, I guess she has, but I don't really know if I could identify what the lesson is that she's learned.
Yeah, I don't really know. I haven't really been able to get a beat on her across three seasons about what she's about, other than that she's a maverick.
Yeah, she's a... If that's what you,
I mentioned it before, but I keep thinking about what they did with her in season two, where it was like they basically Picarded her, where they turned her back into a human, and then at the end, it's like, well, guess we got to make her back into a robot because that's what people want to see. And so then, you know, whereas she had this natural progression where she went from still having the Borg shit on her into finally becoming human again. And then in this season, she would have been still dealing with the stigma of the Borg, because in the same way that Picard does, and then ultimately becoming a captain, that's a great little arc.
Yeah.
But it just got so messy, and there was not really anything else going on there.
Yeah. What's tough about Seven is that I haven't seen all of Voyager with her, but my memory of Voyager 7 is that the character is an ex-Borg who is not completely convinced that humanity is the way to go, really. Like, she's a character who sort of like still believes that there are positives to the Borg. So she's a kind of like a data analog that doesn't actually want to be human and thinks that being part robot is superior to what the humans can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, I just end up sort of confused by where she ends up and what she's supposed to be feeling at this point. I don't really buy her as this sort of freedom fighter who's just going all over the place and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like I, you know, in the way that you're saying, like the coming up with the catchphrase, I feel like working your way into Starfleet doesn't mean anything anymore. They just give you a ship if you're around.
Right,
and you put on the uniform and you fly around.
Honestly, what I thought they were going to do, and I was ready to give them a standing ovation just for synergy, was I thought when Jack was like, where you want me? You want me in sciences? You want me to work in the mess hall? I thought she was going to send him to Lower Decks, and I thought we were going to see the live-action Lower Decks guys. Because we know that's coming, because they're going to be on Strange New World, so I thought there would be a crossover, and you'd see Boimler down there.
Oh, they're going to be on Strange New Worlds?
Yeah, they're doing a crossover where they're going to be live action on Strange New Worlds. At least Boimler and Mariner are.
All right. Well, we'll see. Strange New Worlds starts soon. I'm not sure if I'm excited for Strange New Worlds, but having been away from Strange New Worlds, I think Strange New Worlds has it at least has like the right intent of what it's doing, I think. First season, but I do feel like that show is the most Star Trek of the shows that have come out. It just feels like the franchise.
Yeah, I still think Lower Decks has a bit of an edge.
Yep.
Because when those episodes hit, they hit really hard. Like, I think they do it really well.
Yeah.
The classic structure. But as far as the live action ones go, I would say, Strange New Worlds definitely feels the closest. But yeah, man, I just wish, I don't know why they all have to be so self-aware. Like, so There's a thing that I hate in wrestling, which is anytime John Cena comes back to do a match for WrestleMania or what have you, it always looks like he is half-assing it in a way where it's like he, because he's going to lose, right? He's only there to, for the name recognition and for the crowd and for the pop, and ultimately he's going to lose to the new guy, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what you do when you get older in that industry for the most part. It's like he has to make sure everybody else knows that this is silly.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's going to lose, if that makes sense.
So it's to kind of like undercut his appearance, is that he's not going to take it seriously.
Yeah, like if he was the main attraction, then he's going to take it as seriously as cancer.
Yeah.
But since he's not and he's just there to lose, he is now doing his stuff in a very sort of self-referential way.
Yeah.
So, or it feels that way. So like when he goes to do the five knuckle shuffle, it's like really exaggerated and he's like, yep, it's time to do this thing.
Yeah.
Or like if someone's giving him a German suplex, he's like, whoa, like he's really leaning into the silliness of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel that's the vibe I get from Strange New World a bit, where it's like, yes, it's a Star Trek show, but everybody who's even in this show, even in Picard, we're making Star Trek, but we're kind of still a little embarrassed that we're making Star Trek.
Yeah.
So it's like we have to make sure that you know that we think some of this is silly, and that's just the kind of approach that I don't like.
Yeah, that was a big. I think that's just a big sea change in the franchise. Eventually, like I think that Voyager and Enterprise kind of start that shtick, where like the TNG and DS9 and TOS took themselves seriously and sort of respected themselves in a way, and there wasn't an idea that like they were silly shows yet. So not to the extent that Voyager and Enterprise seem self-conscious of the fact that Star Trek isn't cool. So we'll see where it goes, but I guess that's it for this one. This is the final hurrah of the Next Generation. And I think you said it best. It's just I don't think I would ever rewatch this one, where I probably will rewatch Nemesis, and I would certainly think that I'll see all good things at some point in the future.
I have some work to do tonight. I might actually watch Nemesis while I work tonight.
No, there you go. Let us know how it goes on the next before we start that next TNG podcast. But yeah, any final thoughts about this one? So better than season. Well, is this better than season one of Picard? Yes.
Yes.
Right? Better than season two.
Yeah, by far. Yeah, absolutely.
I still think it's a C-minus, D-plus of a show overall.
Yeah. Well, so I was thinking about that too, and I was like, well, I liked 7 out of the 10 episodes, so by the rules of school, I need to give that a C.
Yes.
But I think I would probably give it a little bit of a bump just because of... I think the returning cast added a lot.
Yeah, they do.
And so I'd probably say C+, B- for me.
Okay.
And that's grading on a curve based on the other seasons.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah, I guess a D seems harsh. I'll give it a C-, I suppose. It's just that it's like, I don't know. I guess I do see Darren Mooney's point a little bit more once it's over. I see the point now more that it's over than when it started, which is that like when it started, the references felt like they could amount to something. This is the problem we talked about before. But now that it's over, I see the references for what they are more clearly. Yeah. And I don't know. I just, I feel that story-wise, this season was not really all that much better than the first two seasons. It was slightly more contained and less sprawling, but I don't think it amounted to anything more than the first two did.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the story is... I think the thematics of season one were better.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the ultimate execution was better here, even though I don't... I think it suffers from all those things we were talking about, where all of the things that they're setting up are just smoke screens and they're not actually part of like a well-crafted story.
Yeah.
I caught Darren's tweets. I saw it today. I don't know if it was from today. Mm-hmm. I guess he hadn't caught up yet because he was on leave or something.
Yes.
And he came back and he said, "I just caught up with Picard. Holy shit! This entire season is about a bunch of boomers who have to save the world from young kids taken over by the woke mind virus. And we talked about that a bit in the last episode. And yeah. I found it so funny for him to come back and be so completely appalled by that.
It's another one of those. Like, are you supposed to take it seriously? Right.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's the thing. It's. You know, Darren's style of criticism would be that if it's in the show, you should take it seriously. Like a lot of mm-hmm. Darren's writing and criticism is to take what the show is saying and sort of extrapolate it into something, some other larger point about it.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. his reviews tend to treat shows as being very intentional in what they're doing. Like there's no happenstance in a show if things work out well. And I think that stuff like this makes it difficult to do that type of reviewing because you just end up going like, what was the point of this? Like, why did they do that? Down to the weirdness of choosing age 25 to be the dividing point.
You know, Caitlin was watching a bit of this with me and she kind of keyed into that bit as well. And I was like, yeah, we were talking about this, how weird it is. And then we were talking about it a bit, and I was like, yeah, I don't think, I mean, I think it's unfortunately timed in that regard, but I have to imagine the reason that it ends up being the way it is, this idea that, oh, people under 25 get taken off the board and the old guy, is because you need to get six old people on the bridge of the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like you need to isolate them. and have them be the ones who save the day.
It's right, because they've all gone through the transporter. There's no way to get around that fact. You know what I
right.
mean?
Right, yeah. Yeah, and there's no... this show isn't about Jack Crusher and Sidney LaForge saving the day. It's about the old people saving the day.
Yeah.
So if that's your end point, if that's your goal, and you start extrapolating it out, you're going to have to make decisions to get you to that point. And... You accidentally make Fox News's favorite version of Star Trek.
Make a connection. Tucker Carlson out at Fox. That was the news today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to date the podcast.
Yeah.
I guess that's it then. So, The Last Generation. We're done with Picard Season 3. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting the show at patreon.com/LePenskyFile. We'll be back with that TNG wrap-up. I think I've got a good episode lined up for us, Clay. Might not be an all... Well, here's the thing. We can either do Tapestry, which is the last great episode that you didn't cover, which is the Picard and Q episode where Picard goes back into his past and like relives the experience of being stabbed that makes him the man that he is.
Oh, sure. I didn't do that one.
No, you didn't do that one. So that's the last, like, traditionally considered great. Or we can do what I think is a very strong episode, but is not considered an all-time classic, but it's a really good Picard episode.
Which one is that?
Lessons, which is Picard Lessons? Falls in Love.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm down for either one.
I'll put a vote. I'll put a poll on Patreon. Those will be the two options, Lessons or Tapestry, so you guys can vote. So that's it. All right. We're done. I always get to the end of this and I feel like I should give more of a summation seeing as this is TNG's final appearance, but I don't know. I think we said it all. So do you have anything you want to say?
The most controversial thing I can think of to say is I found the TNG appearance at the end of Enterprise more satisfying than the show. That's not true. I'm just joking. But it's I don't know. I'm kind of not at the same time. I don't really know.
That was in Darren's tweet thread was that like when Enterprise came out with that finale, right? So so something has changed because I think he's right about this. When Enterprise came out, people and audiences and critics watching it were going, "What the fuck? Like what is this? You're just going to bring back Enterprise people into this show?" And when this series happened, people go, this is exactly what art is. This is cinema.
I think that's an unfair comparison to make, actually, because
It's a show what about they did Enterprise.
On, yeah, what they did on Enterprise was they completely undercut a show that had nothing to do at all, could not have had less to do with Star Trek The Next Generation in favor of the thing everybody liked.
Yes.
Whereas this one, Picard is your central character. So it's just from the jump.
Yeah,
from the jump, you're like, okay, when is the gang showing up?
Yeah.
So I think that's a bit unfair. But I think the thing is with this is it's best viewed as a class reunion more than anything else. Like, I have less issue with the way that they presented all of this reference stuff and callbacks and everybody's favorite shit. I have less of an issue with it in this than I do in the other shows that are not connected to the TNG or any of the other shows. So like when they do shit like this on Discovery, it feels more desperate than it does here. Because I think this is a show specifically made for people who like this stuff. So they're gonna play the hits.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to see the Rolling Stones just to hear their newest album.
Yeah.
And when you do, you go, why the fuck do all the ships shoot at the same thing at the same time? So I think that's kind of, I'm surprised. Well, I'm not surprised because Darren leans into that stuff a lot, but I feel like he should cut it a little bit of slack in that regard because that's what the show is. I mean, this isn't really ultimately meant to be the next great evolution of Star Trek. It's just it's a hits package.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I wonder how much of that comes down to, I guess that all just depends on like the branding of it, right? Like if it's a movie or it was not called Star Trek Picard, I would kind of consider that to be the case. I don't know. I guess it straddles a line uncomfortably for me where it feels like it's trying to do something. It's that thing about it's trying to be prestige TV, but it's not prestige TV at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's tough. But I think I'll still just remember the TNG finale being All Good Things and Nemesis at this point.
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
This will be the way it is. Well, hope everybody enjoyed the Picard season 3. That's it for that Star Trek show. Much like the Enterprise ships, we're just flying through series now. Discovery's over. Picard is over.
Mm-hmm.
We've lived a lifetime in our short few years.
Well, Discovery's not over yet, right?
No, the last season is coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kyle had the idea. Maybe we'll just cover the last episode of Discovery.
I was thinking that just now because I was like, I feel like we should be there. For the end. Yeah,
we can do that. And I think we'll cover Strange New Worlds if people are interested in that. Patreon numbers are good whenever we cover these new series. So, and that's not my least favorite of the new Trek shows. So we'll see. That's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Check out all the other shows on Patreon. Check them out on their feeds, blah, blah, blah. Join the Discord if you want to talk about this. Let us know what you thought about Picard season 3. People have been chiming in on the Discord. And that's it. Thanks again. See you later.